So I'll write a list of all the books that I want to read.
Did you read that?
I did. Did you read that thing?
Yeah. Did you read?
Uh-huh.
Did you read?
Mm-hmm.
Did you read?
Of course I did.
Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and we're back with The Takeaway, where we're continuing our week-long series of conversations with the authors of books we're loving this summer.
My name is Christy Lauren Adams, and I am the author of Unbossed, How Black Girls Are Leading the Way.
After reading Unbossed, I immediately added the book to the curriculum of a summer camp for young girls I'm helping to lead this month. Unbossed is organized around the stories of 8 Black girls who are leaders in their communities. And their stories have been a valuable way to talk with the young girls in our camp and to help them think about their own capacity for change making. Here's what 9-year-old Jordan and 5-year-old Josephine told me about being a good leader.
People that are leaders and who has like a group and who just like, let's just say someone wanted a business like of drawing. So then one of the people would be a leader to tell what should we draw.
A good leader means you have to listen, and you don't listen, it will make you be, the leader will be really sad and not be a leader anymore. They'll get just give up.
I asked Christy Adams, why this book now?
When I wrote the book, it was around the time of the start of the pandemic, and we got to see Gen Z on display. It was around the time where, you know, people were wondering how they were doing because of the pandemic, because they were wearing masks, because they were not in school. But then in the wake of the murder of George Floyd, we also got to see their leadership on display. So that was when we really saw Gen Z really take center stage, because the conversation for the past few years have been about millennials for the most part. I've always had a heart for Black girls particularly. So, you know, to see their leadership on social media, whether it was TikTok or Instagram or on television, we got to see, you know, virtual graduations with their, you know, their leadership. So it really emerged during that time. And I said, you know what? It's about time that we got to really see them.
So, Christy, when you say this opportunity to really see them, you choose 8 stories to tell. How did you make the choices of those 8 young women?
Well, for starters, I wanted the versatility of their leadership to be on display. So I wanted to make sure that it wasn't just one particular area of leadership. I wanted to show that Black girls, you know, have a variety of different leadership styles, and it's intergenerational. Black women have been displaying their leadership for decades, right? For centuries almost. And so I was very specific about highlighting mental health advocacy, literacy activism, racial justice activism. And it wasn't difficult because these young Black women, you know, they were in Vogue magazine, they were just regular social media, you know, you can see their organizations, you know, their websites, et cetera, and just the work they've been doing. So I was really particular about that because I wanted people to see that there wasn't just one type of Black girl, because there's not just one type of leadership.
Let's talk about Sanyu and Brown Girls Read.
I met Sanyu when I wrote my first book, Parable of the Brown Girl. Her leadership, you know, always stood out to me. And I met her when we were partnering to do a program with Barnes & Noble, et cetera. And Sanyu's literacy leadership, particularly wanting to, you know, focus on brown kids and them seeing, you know, representations of themselves in books, et cetera. That was something that was really important to her. So she has a strategic leadership that I focus on that's really significant.
When you talk about literary leadership, I mean, I find sort of the ways that Sanyu is up to this to be really compelling. So talk a little bit about how she thinks about and talks about what it means to be a literary leader. I'm not sure that I would have ever even thought of that area before encountering her work.
Yeah, you know, we've talked a lot, we've seen a lot, particularly on social media when it comes to this push for this need for diverse literature, right? And so I see that as a form of activism, you know, particularly now where books are being banned and, you know, everyone's talking about critical race theory, et cetera. Sanyu has been doing this work for years and really just trying to push for there to be much more representation, not just representation in bookstores, but for young brown kids to see themselves represented in books. So for her, for me, it's you know, it's not even just the content of the books. For her, it's really the aesthetic as well, right? She wants brown kids to be excited about seeing themselves, just the way that she was excited about, you know, seeing representations of herself when she started reading when she was at such a young age.
Talk to me about some of the young women you highlight here, whose work has really been about leading after these moments of violence. Maybe Tia Moy Roberts?
Yeah, Tia Moy actually, her leadership began in the wake of the Parkland shooting because she was a student at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School at the time. And I remember seeing her leadership on display before I even thought about writing the book. I remember seeing her and a bunch of other young Black kids that were students at the school basically saying, look, they did a press conference on television and they said, look, there are other Black kids, there are Black kids at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, because the faces that were being highlighted, particularly for March for Our Lives, were white faces, right? With the exception of Emma Gonzalez. And so, you know, they wanted them to know that Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School is diverse, that there are Black and brown kids at the school that were just as affected, just as angry, just as passionate about, you know, gun violence. And she also wanted to highlight not just gun violence that was taking place in white neighborhoods, but gun violence that continued to take place in Black neighborhoods, in Black and brown neighborhoods. And so that was something that was really important to her. And from there, she actually was asked to be a part of March for Our Lives. And she joined the board and she joined the speaker circuit. They went on in the summers and they toured around and they did voter registration, et cetera. But the wonderful thing about Tia Moy is that she used her voice. That was when she began to emerge as a leader. And I call her a transformational leader, which I think is something that's really important to highlight, because for me, when we think of transformational leadership, we think of Martin Luther King, we think of Malcolm X. We very seldom think of Fannie Lou Townsend Hamer. You know, we very seldom think of Black women in those roles, but I wanted people to know and to read that this is a young transformational leader, not just in the making, it's literally innate within her.
We're going to pause and take a quick break and come back with more of my conversation with Christy Lauren Adams, author of Unbossed.
Every memory you think you have of the past.
The house you grew up in. Your first kiss.
It's not simply an idea. It's a physical trace left in your brain.
I own those memories. They define me.
But what happens when those memories are stolen from you?
In the blink of an eyelid.
Can you imagine what to have one night 20 years long? That's what it's been like. Just like death.
Memory and Forgetting on Radiolab. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Back with The Takeaway, I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and we've been talking with Christy Lauren Adams, the author of Unbossed, How Black Girls Are Leading the Way. Take a listen to a couple leaders of the future.
A good leader is someone who takes care of their friends and doesn't force and like lets them take breaks, lets them have freedom.
Whenever I was doing sports, we did a tug of war challenge. And then she said I could be the leader first because I was in the front. It was kind of fun.
That was my 8-year-old daughter, Anna, and her friend, 10-year-old Lizzie. Now, I asked Christy Lauren Adams to tell me about another one of the phenomenal young women in her book, Grace Callwood.
Grace Callwood was diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma when she was 8 years old. But leading up to that, she had been experiencing some pain. She had some bumps, I believe, in the back of her head, some lumps that her mother and her grandmother noticed. And so her mother, TJ, who her and I got close during this process, she took her to the doctor. And the doctor basically asked if she was braiding Grace's hair too tightly, because, you know, usually that, she says, happens when Black women are braiding, you know, Black girls' hair and the lumps take place. And she said, you know, I know my daughter, that's a different type of lump. And she also had to think to herself, you know, oh, I couldn't be braiding her hair too tightly. You know, so it was almost like for her, she began to question even herself in that moment. So she had to take Grace to more than one doctor. Her grandmother actually went back to TJ and said, listen, maybe you need a second opinion. And when she went and got that second opinion, the doctor was like, we need to do surgery on her right away. So within the day, they, you know, did a surgery the following day, but they knew that it was something that was more. But what's interesting is that when I was interviewing TJ and Grace for this book, TJ said, you know, I think now is the time in reflecting and having this conversation with me. She said, and I didn't realize that, you know, I was basically gaslighted, that this is a problem when it comes to believing Black women and believing Black girls. And this is what we're saying is happening with our bodies. But immediately she was dismissed.
Tell me about Hannah Lucas and the notion of visionary leadership.
Hannah Lucas had an unfortunate moment. She was a young woman that grew up in the South. So she currently lives in Georgia, I believe, and was experiencing bullying in school. She was experiencing some illnesses. And that was also another issue, very similar to Grace's. She's another one that went to doctors to say, hey, look, I've been passing out. I've been having issues with headaches and dizziness, and was dismissed for the most part. And so she wasn't even diagnosed until much, much later. But because of her illness and how it was not diagnosed, because of the bullying, because students were bullying her, not just for her race and her hair, but also because she was passing out in school and they didn't really understand that, she started, you know, experiencing some suicidal ideation. And there was one moment where she tried to take some pills, and her mother came in at the moment that she began to take those pills, took them out of her hand. And she said in that moment, she was crying and it was very dramatic, but she saw herself pushing a button and she didn't know what that button was until a few days later. She thought about it a bit more. And she said, you know, I saw myself pushing something with my thumb. And I thought, you know, it would be really great if people, particularly young people, were in a moment of distress the same way that I was. You know, we're always holding our phones. If we were able to push something, some app, some button that let people know that we're not okay. So she started something called the Not Okay app. Her and her brother got together and created this Not Okay app. It is an app that basically does just that. It allows people that are in a moment of distress where they can press the button, and the button actually on the app sends a notification to five of their closest trusted contacts and lets them know that they're not okay. And then also lets the ones that they informed where they are, like their GPS signal, so that they can come to them or call them in their moment of distress. I call Hannah a visionary leader because she saw something and then she took the steps in order to make sure that that came to fruition. In a spiritual world, I call that a spiritual prophetic leader, prophetic visionary leadership, very similar to that of Harriet Tubman. Hannah saw something and she went for it. And the wonderful thing that I love about Hannah is that she didn't just focus on creating the app. She also focused on her own mental health. She made sure to get counseling. She made sure to tend to her own emotions while her brother worked on the technical part.
In each case, for each of these young women, you give us a way of categorizing, not in an exclusive way, but sort of understanding how these young women and the work that they're doing fits into conceptions of leadership. So including mobilizing leadership, ethical leadership, pace-setting leadership, and standing with the people. What is important about understanding these individual girls within a broader context of a form and kind of leadership?
I, a long time ago, started an organizational leadership PhD program that I did not finish. And I remember when we were reading texts about, and these were academic texts about different styles of leadership. These were books that were written by mainly white men and white women. These were also books that were using examples of leadership that were mainly adult male dominated leadership examples. And what I really wanted was for people to take these girls seriously. So I'm not just writing about, you know, oh, Hannah, she does a really good job with Not Okay app. It was really important for me to assign them something that was literally innate within them, and to assign them styles of leadership that people have been studying and researching literally for the past decade. So transformational leadership or adaptive leadership or ethical leadership, these are forms of leadership that are within these young girls that we can study for ourselves. So it's not just for Black girls, even though I want Black girls to read and be inspired and to be able to assign, you know, not just one of these forms of leadership, but to discover their own leadership journeys. But aside from that, I want for the older white man who is a researcher, not just to turn to the books that I read in my courses, but to turn to a book like this and say, okay, adaptive leadership, Jaychelle Sneck, she is an adaptive leader. And she's not just an adaptive leader in theory. She literally has the qualities and the characteristics of what we know adaptive leadership to be. And I also find it interesting, last week I was at a seminar at a Womanist Institute at Princeton, and one of the speakers got up and she was, you know, giving a lecture on adaptive leadership. And I just remember thinking, wow, you know, Jaychelle literally could be in here because this is who she is. This is the work that she's doing right now. And, you know, I know people don't automatically default to thinking of young girls when they think of these, you know, leadership styles and presenting on them. But I want for people to get to that point, to start to look to young girls' leadership.
Christy Lauren Adams, author of Unbossed, How Black Girls Are Leading the Way. I'm so jealous I wasn't at that conference with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.